only attribute I possess. I'm not handy. I can't fix things. Whenever something breaks in our apartment, I just look at my wife sheepishly and say, we should call someone. I don't even call my wife calls. I can barely figure out how to work the phone. When the handyman comes over, I just kind of silently watch him work. I don't know what to say.
You want some brownies? My wife could bake us some brownies. I'd bake them, but I don't know how to turn on the oven.
I try to act like I'm working on something more important.
Yeah, I'm more of a tech guy. I'm really good at computer stuff, like checking email.
I'm just not manly. I don't know what happened. The men in my family are manly. My dad and my brothers loved cars. I mean, loved cars in a manly way. They'd talk about cars, go to car shows, even stop and look at other people's cars in a parking lot. I barely have an opinion on cars. I do know that trucks are manlier than cars. The most manly form of transportation, of course, is the pickup truck. My brother Mike has a pickup because he's a man. Pickup truck commercials just give me anxiety. There's always a voiceover bellowing, "You can pull 1 ton, 2 tons, you can pull an aircraft carrier." I always think, why? Why do you need that? I only see people taking their pickup trucks to Cracker Barrel. My brother Mike, like many other pickup owners, never seems to be picking anything up with his pickup. I find this confusing. It's like walking around with a big empty piece of luggage.
Are you about to travel somewhere?
No, but I'm the type of guy who would.
To be fair, I really can't judge. I don't own a pickup, or even a car, for that matter. Whenever I go back to Indiana to visit my brother Mitch, who is car-obsessed, I rent a car. I drive to his house from Chicago. We usually have the same conversation.
What kind of car you rent?
I think it's blue.
Is that 4 or 6 cylinders?
It has 4 wheels, I think. Wait, cylinders aren't wheels, right?
But steak I get. If eating steak is manly, then I am all man. I'm like man and a half. I love steak so much, it's actually the way I show affection for other men.
You're such a good guy, I'm going to buy you a steak.
Men bond over steak.
We'll sit and eat meat together and not talk about our families.
I recently toured for 2 weeks with my friend Tom. When I returned home, Jeannie asked, "How's Tom's family?" I don't know. I only spent like 12 hours a day with the guy. I know he likes a medium-rare ribeye. What else is there to know? I order steak from Omaha Steaks. Yes, I order my meat over the internet, which I'm pretty sure is a sign of a problem. I guess I don't want my steak shopping to cut into my steak eating. Ordering Omaha Steaks is very simple. It's like Amazon.com for beef. A couple of days after I place my order, a styrofoam cooler shows up. It's the same type of cooler that I imagine they will deliver my replacement heart in. Omaha Steaks is nice enough to provide dry ice in case I'd like to make a bomb or something. Occasionally when I grab my Omaha Steaks cooler out of the hallway, I'll make eye contact with a neighbor, who I'm sure will later tell his spouse,
"Jim got another box of meat today. That apartment will be available in a couple of weeks."
The only problem with Omaha Steaks as a company is that you can't get rid of them. Once you order from them, they're like Jehovah's Witnesses calling you all the time. Omaha Steaks rep: "Hey, you want some more steaks?"
Me: "I got a delivery yesterday."
"How about some ribeyes?"
I don't need any more steak, thank you.
"How about some fillets? You want some fillets?"
"Really, I'm fine with steaks."
"Okay, I'll call tomorrow." Hey, you want some turkey? Ham?
I thought you were Omaha Steaks.
"You want some drywall?
Aren't you Omaha Steaks? I'm right outside your window. I'm so lonely."
I could never be a vegetarian for many reasons, but the main one is steak. Sure, bacon, bratwurst, and pastrami are pretty amazing, but steak is the soul of all carnivores. Steak is the embodiment of premium meat eating. I am a meat lover, and steak is the tuxedo of meat. The priciest dish on most menus is the surf and turf, the steak and lobster. Who are they kidding? Steak is clearly driving the steak and lobster entree. The steak is the headliner. There are way more people going for the steak and the lobster than the people that are going for the lobster and the steak. The people who want the lobster are just ordering the lobster. Lobster's appeal is all perception, and steak is truly extraordinary. Steak has its own knives. There aren't steak restaurants. There are steak houses. Steak gets a house. There's no tuna house. Tuna gets a can. I love a steakhouse. It's really the perfect environment for eating a steak. They always seem like throwbacks to another era, a time when kale was just a weed in your backyard. All steakhouses seem to be dimly lit and covered in dark wood. They are usually decorated with a combination of red leather and red leather. You know there is a huge locker full of hanging carcasses like 5 feet away. The waiters are no-nonsense pros. They approach in a gruff manner.
Welcome. Let's not beat around the bush. You're getting a steak. We serve meat here. Want some meat?
Yes, ma'am. At Peter Luger's in Brooklyn, the waiters usually won't even let you order.
You're all getting porterhouses.
Okay. Some steakhouses show you the meat raw. At places like Smith and Walensky, a tray will be wheeled out with different cuts on it. One by one, the waiter will pick up a glob of raw meat and thrust it at the table.
You can get this. You can get this.
Men are such visual animals that they will point at the fat, swirled hunk of flesh and grunt,
that one.
It's all very simple and primal. At other restaurants, fancy non-steak items are prepared in a code of complexity. Al dente, braised, flambéed. But the way steak is cooked is understandable, even to a monosyllabic caveman.
Rare. Medium. Well,
you barely even have to know how to talk. Of course, vegetables are also served at steakhouses, but they are called side dishes. Like their presence there is only justified by the existence of the steak. They're the entourage of the steak, and you can take them or leave them. The sides are not included with the purchase of a steak. They are a la carte in steakhouses, like napkins on Spirit Airlines. Sides are never called vegetables because what is done to vegetables in steakhouses makes them no longer qualify as vegetables.
We have a spinach cooked in ice cream. We also have a bowl of marshmallows with a dollop of yam. And our house specialty is a baked potato that we somehow stuff with 5 sticks of butter. We also have a diet potato, which is stuffed with only 4 sticks of butter.
Everything about a steakhouse is manly. So it's no surprise that sports heroes own steakhouses. I've been to Ditka's, Elway's, and Shula's, which all had great steaks. But I'm pretty sure those NFL greats didn't cook my steak.
Hey, you were good at football. Why don't you open a meat restaurant?
They have nothing to do with each other. Nothing except the same demographic, manly men like me. My love of steakhouses is sincere. When I die, I would like to be buried in a steakhouse. Well, not buried, just my casket on display in the dining room. That way people can come in, eat, and stare at me lying in state. Maybe someone will say Jim died too soon, but this steak was aged perfectly. I don't think people in steakhouses would mind that much about my casket. People are in steakhouses for steak. Patron, why is there a casket in the middle of the room?
Waiter, oh, that is a comedian, Jim Gaffigan. His only wish.
Patron, I'll have the ribeye, baked potato, and can I get some crumbled blue cheese on the side?
Waiter, I'll bring that right away, Mrs. Gaffigan.
I love steakhouses, but I realize there is something barbaric about the whole experience. Going to a place to eat cowhide parts. Eventually, eating steak won't be socially acceptable. In 200 years, I'm sure the following conversation will take place. Person 1. Did you know that in 2014, people would sit in dark rooms and eat sliced up cow by candlelight?
Person 2. Not my ancestors. My ancestors have been vegan since they came over on the Mayflower. I read that on Ancestry.com.
Kobe beef. The decadent meat. The Japanese are better at being human beings. They just are. Have you used a Japanese toilet? I realize I'm bringing up a toilet in a food book, but just, I have a point. The Japanese clearly saw toilet paper as an archaic, barbaric, and probably the most disgusting part of human existence, and they fixed it. After using a Japanese toilet, you actually leave the bathroom cleaner than you were before you entered it. That is impressive. Granted, the Japanese are also selling used women's underwear and vending machines at train stations, so I'm not saying they should take over anything, but they analyzed something that we were all used to and found a way to make it better. They did the same thing with the steak. That's pretty impressive, considering that the steak didn't even need to be improved. After all, it was a steak to begin with. It's sort of like someone adding another day to the weekend. What I'm talking about, of course, is Kobe beef. Kobe beef comes from cows that are fed beer and massaged with sake. When I first heard this, all I could think was, I want to be Kobe beef. How do I sign up for that gig? Those must be some happy cows. Beers and a massage? I've heard of factory farms, but now there are spa farms? I can just see the cows with the slices of cucumber over their eyes, guiding the masseuse. A little lower, a little lower. Oh, yeah, right there. That's a major stress knot. Those cows have no idea they're on cow death row. They're just lost in euphoria.
You know what, honey? This cow could go for another beer. Ah, ah.
You Japanese love design. You made that sake bottle look like a giant hatchet. Ow! I said no deep tissue on the neck. I guess it is a pretty humane way to go. The cows are probably too drunk to see the end coming. We are basically eating an intoxicated cow, and yet it seems appealing. Yeah, that sounds good. I suppose we can look forward to chickens raised on grain alcohol and pigs that are given champagne with their slop. Kobe beef is an indication of how decadent we have become. Not only do we live lives of luxury, now we need to eat things that have lived a life of luxury. I envision a demanding diner asking a waiter who's just delivered his steak, "Did this cow go to private school? I only eat cows that went to private school."
"It did. Do you have anything on your menu that owned a boat?"
I'd like to know who came up with the idea for Kobe beef.
Friend at a grill. "Do you like that steak?"
Steak eater. "This is the best steak I've ever had. It's amazing.
You know, I fed that cow some beers."
"You got the cow drunk? That's awesome."
"Then I massaged it."
"Huh? What? Why? Why would you massage an animal you gave tons of alcohol to?"
"The cow liked it."
I'm not hungry anymore. I'm going to go call Special Victims Unit."
No matter who came up with it or why, in the end, it just matters how something tastes. When I first tasted Kobe beef, my thought was, we need to start massaging vegetables. I finally understood why Kobe beef is sold by the ounce, like gold and silver. And like all fine things sold by the ounce, its enjoyment comes at a cost. If you order a very large Kobe steak, be prepared for a credit check. Maybe even take out a policy. What if the Kobe beef accidentally falls on the floor? Or even worse, some kid knocks their water over onto your plate. Then you'll regret not getting flood insurance. Of course, you could always get imitation Kobe beef, Wagyu beef, which is the same thing, but just not from Japan. Like champagne that's not from the Champagne region of France. Kobe beef not from Japan is, well, not Kobe beef. A Wagyu beef is the sparkling wine of beef. Why is this important information? Take it from a steak expert like me with a distinguished palate. Who cares? They're both amazing. Anyway, thank you, Japan, for the steak, the toilet. And now can you please fix my bald spot? Not the city in Italy. On the continuum scale of meat, on one end is steak and on the other end is bologna. All other types of meat fall somewhere between these two extremes. Steak and bologna are the alpha and omega of meats. Steak is premium and bologna is, well, bologna. If steak is the tuxedo of meat, then bologna is the stained members only jacket. Maybe that analogy did not make sense, but neither does bologna. I honestly don't even know where bologna comes from. I know it's a type of deli meat, but what is it? We know that ham and bacon come from pigs, and hamburgers come from cows, and turkey and chicken come from, well, turkeys and chickens. Bologna is just bologna. No one is really sure what animal or animals produce bologna. Occasionally, bologna will be labeled as beef bologna. But if you look really closely, you can see a tiny question mark next to the word beef. I like to imagine bologna is just a slice of a giant hot dog. A meat that also has questionable origins. Bologna isn't even spelled close to the way it's pronounced. I'm not sure how we decided on the commonly used pronunciation.
Guy 1. All right, how do we want to pronounce this word?
Guy 2. Bologna.
I don't know if you noticed, but there's a G in the word.
I don't see no G. Let's go with bologna.
Okay, well, the word does end with an A. Bologna. We're going with bologna. Trust me. I decided on the pronunciation of the word colonel.
Regardless of where the pronunciation, or the meat for that matter, comes from, there are definitely negative connotations associated with bologna. That's a bunch of bologna. You're full of bologna. That kind of implies bologna makes you a liar. I enjoy bologna. I really do. Or maybe I don't. Maybe that's just the bologna talking. Its spelling is even bologna. Most of my childhood, I ate bologna for lunch. A bologna sandwich with ketchup. This is valid proof of my white trash heritage and that my parents were not very discerning about what I stuck in my mouth. "Jimmy, for lunch, do you want bologna or rat poison?" Part of me is always a little surprised when I still see bologna on sale in the grocery store. I thought you only ate bologna when you were 5 years old in the 70s or in prison. Otherwise, I imagine bologna getting banned along with trans fats and gigantic soft drinks. As gross as the concept of bologna is in and of itself, the most revolting bologna is the bologna that has olives in it.
I never knew who that was for. Maybe there was a time when bologna was served in restaurants.
Waiter, and how would you like your bologna prepared?
Man,
I like my bologna like a martini with an olive.
So dirty?
Yes, very.
The only positive thing I can say about bologna is that it is half a step above Spam, which actually does not appear anywhere on the meat continuum. Bacon, the candy of meat. If I bought this book, I'd probably go right to this section. Bacon is, after all, bacon. Bacon makes people happy. If you walked up to a stranger and said, bacon, they would probably respond with a smile or, yes, please. Everyone loves bacon, but bacon holds a special place in my heart, and I guess my stomach. My affection for bacon goes beyond any appropriate relationship a man should have with a food item. Even when I look at photos of a stack of crispy bacon sent to me by the lunatics on Twitter, an involuntary awe creeps out of my mouth, like I'm looking at a newborn. Bacon is the candy of meats. Bacon even defies its categorization as a food and becomes a metaphor for wealth. You take care of your family by bringing home the bacon. When I bring home the bacon, I just buy more bacon. What else do we really want to spend our money on but bacon? I love everything about bacon. I even love the name Bacon. You can't tell me some of the success of Kevin Bacon isn't somehow tied to his name. After all, nobody wants to see a Kevin Tofu movie.
You want to see this movie with me? Who's in it?
Kevin Bacon.
Sounds good.
The good. The power of bacon seems to know no bounds. It's not just the taste, which is like eating pure joy. The frying of bacon even sounds like applause. As it is cooked, the crackle of grease cheers, "Yay, bacon!" The smell of bacon can make a vegetarian renounce their lifestyle. Bacon is so good, it is used to improve other foods. If it weren't for bacon, we probably wouldn't even know what a water chestnut is, or why anyone would eat a fig. Bacon bits are like the fairy dust of the food community, sprinkling magical taste on undesirable dishes.
Man, I don't want this baked potato. Fairy bacon mother weighs bacon one.
Bring!
Now it's my favorite part of the meal. Thank you, fairy bacon mother.
Woman, I don't want this salad. Fairy bacon mother waves one.
Bring!
Fairy bacon mother. Bibbidi bobbidi bacon.
Oh my, you just turned it into a delicious entree. Thank you, fairy bacon mother.
Of course, once you put bacon in a salad, it's no longer a salad. It just becomes a game of find the bacon and the lettuce. I just feel like I'm panning for gold. Found one. Eureka! Bacon has special powers. I bet if you sprinkle bacon bits on a strip of bacon, you could travel back in time through a tasty vortex.
This would be redundant for me because I would just travel back to a time when I was eating bacon. It would be a bacon-to-bacon time-space continuum.
Preparing and serving bacon. The journey of bacon starts from humble beginnings. A package of uncooked bacon is, well, to be generous, not attractive. Taking the raw bacon out of the clear, flesh-filled FedEx envelope doesn't help its appeal. You know bacon is bad for you when you see it raw. Zebra-striped raw meat and fat strips are not easy on the eye. Everyone has this same reaction. Oh my God, fry that up before I realize what I'm putting into my body. There are not many ways to prepare bacon. You either can fry it or die of trichinosis. Sadly, as bacon is cooked, an amazing amount of shrinkage occurs. You start with a pound and end up with a bookmark. The shrinkage while cooking foreshadows the main problem with bacon. There never seems to be enough. I never feel like I get enough bacon. At a traditional American breakfast, it seems we are rationing bacon.
Here are your two strips of bacon.
Eating two strips of bacon seems cruel.
I want more bacon!
At a breakfast buffet, there is usually a whole metal tray filled with upwards of 4,000 slices of bacon. I've counted. Everyone seems to linger over the bacon tray at the buffet like they've discovered the location where bacon originates. You almost expect a rainbow to be shooting out of it. I found it! I found the source of all bacon! Everyone pauses at the bacon tray, trying to evaluate what a socially acceptable amount of bacon to put on your plate might be. The bacon tray is always at the end of the buffet. This is a crafty attempt by the chef to preserve the limited and endangered resource that is bacon. You always regret the items you already have on your plate. What am I doing with all this worthless fruit? If I had known you were here, bacon, I would have waited. I'd eat only you, bacon.
Types of bacon.
When I talk about bacon, I'm talking about the American version of bacon, which is pork belly bacon, the kind Jesus ate. Besides normal bacon and Canadian bacon, I didn't even know other types of bacon existed until I traveled internationally. Canadian bacon. I was always confused by the term Canadian bacon. Sure, you have to love a country that has its own type of bacon, but I remember thinking, when is someone going to tell Canada that its bacon is really just round ham? Canadian bacon is a different type of bacon that comes from the side cut of the pig. Canadians don't even refer to Canadian bacon as Canadian bacon. They call it back bacon. And they call real bacon, strip-style bacon, American bacon. The bacon the British eat seems like a combination of the Canadian bacon and the American bacon. They call it bacon, but it's really not bacon. Then again, they call a cookie a biscuit, so they have a different word for all the important stuff. Fatback. Supposedly fatback is like bacon on steroids. I've never tried fatback, probably because it's called fatback. I don't know which word creeps me out more, fat or back. Why didn't they just throw in hairy while they were at it? This is some delicious hairy fatback. That reminds me your uncle called. Turkey bacon. Our health concerns over bacon have led to horrible bacon alternatives. The most popular fake bacon is turkey bacon. I refer to it as TB, which tastes like an airline food version of bacon. I think we can all agree turkey bacon was a valiant but failed experiment. Some believe 70% of all disappointment we feel in life is from turkey bacon. I'll stick with good old American pig bacon, thank you. The bad. Sadly, you shouldn't eat bacon all day, and according to my overly protective wife, you can't. Eating a donut is a healthier choice. I've heard each piece of bacon you eat takes 9 minutes off your life, which means I probably should have died in early 1984. To me, the only bad part of bacon is that it makes you thirsty. For more bacon. Apparently, bacon affects the brain in the same way as cocaine, overloading pleasure centers and requiring increasing amounts of bacon to feel satisfied. That doesn't necessarily sound horrible to me, but we all know the negatives of bacon. A strip of bacon gives you high cholesterol and has a fat percentage that a normal person should only consume over a decade. Bacon is the opposite of medicine, but if I died choking on a piece of bacon, I'd liken it to being murdered by a lover. We've known bacon has been bad for us for thousands of years. Eating bacon is literally a dietary restriction in certain religions.
Man 1. Our rules to join this religion are no killing, no cheating on your wife, no bacon. What was that last one? No bacon.
I'm in the wrong cult. Is there a bacon cult around here?
The bad news for bacon goes on and on. Bacon prices are always rising, and recently researchers discovered that eating bacon lowers sperm count. This study also determined that researchers waste time and money on useless studies rather than finding a cure for cancer. I don't understand why we even need to understand the correlation between bacon and sperm count. I would have loved to have been there when that research grant was pitched to the board. Researcher. I like to study the effects of bacon on fertility. You know, the possibility of bacon as a contraceptive. Grant board member. Are you even a scientist? Contraceptive or not, I've always consumed enormous amounts of bacon, and I have 5 children. I guess if I didn't eat bacon, I'd have 30 children and probably be dead from exhaustion. Really, what I'm saying is bacon saves lives. How do we know swine flu isn't caused by not eating bacon? The negatives associated with bacon have forced us to restrict our bacon consumption to the morning. I guess the idea is that before noon, we are too tired to care that we are eating something entirely made out of nitrates. After the morning, bacon goes into hiding. The word bacon is not even spoken after 11 a.m. Bacon becomes he who must not be named. You would never be crass enough to order a bacon sandwich in the afternoon. You must speak in code. You have to play dumb and order the BLT. Oh, I didn't even know bacon was in the BLT. I just love lettuce and tomatoes. You're like the underage kid trying to buy liquor while attempting to distract the cashier by also purchasing a pack of gum. I just needed something to drink while I chew my gum. The word club in the club sandwich is meant to signify the exclusive group that does not like to admit they like bacon with their turkey. Bacon, of course, comes from the pig. The pig is an amazing animal. If you feed a pig an apple, that apple will be metabolized by the pig and eventually turn into bacon. The pig is converting a tasteless piece of fruit, essentially garbage, into one of the most delicious foods known to man. The pig has to be one of the most successful recycling programs ever.
When you think about it, that is more impressive than anything Steve Jobs did. The pig is remarkable on so many fronts. Bacon, ham, pork chops come from pigs. The pig should really have a better reputation. You think calling someone a pig would be a compliment. You're such a pig. Well, thank you. I try. It is actually the pig who should be known as man's best friend. I love dogs, but pigs would make great companions. And when they die, you could have a barbecue.
I'm sorry to hear about your pig passing.
When's the luau?
Pastrami playdate. After listening to this book so far and hearing how I spend most of my time and energy, you may wonder if I ever think about or see my 5 young children. At the writing of this book, I have a 9-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 1-year-old. I should really learn their names. Being the father of 5 is a heavy responsibility. I try to make an effort to spend as much quality one-on-one time with each of my children. To my wife's chagrin, this usually involves me taking them to get something to eat. My favorite place to go on my daddy time dates is Katz's Deli to split a pastrami sandwich. A true New York Jewish deli, Katz has an authentic, old New York environment. Even the process of getting a sandwich is a throwback to an era of industrial-age bureaucracy. It's an insane system, really. Upon entering Katz, you are given a ticket. If there is more than one adult in your party, you get a ticket for each adult. You have to hang on to the ticket the entire time you're at Katz's so they can write down everything you have ordered. You must present the ticket when you leave. If you lose the ticket, they kill you, I think. I'm not sure. I just know I don't want to find out. Either way, you don't go to Katz's for the service or the hospitality. This is not to say people are rude. It's just more of a do-it-yourself place. There's a self-service water dispenser stacked high with vintage water glasses that looks like it was in the movie On the Waterfront. Anyway, you go to Katz's for the deli. Specifically, I go for the pastrami. After you receive your ticket from the pastrami TSA, you approach a counter where you order your sandwich. As you wait, you are given a sample hand slice of your selected sandwich meat, which is placed in front of you on a small plate right next to a makeshift paper tip jar. I am always suspicious of a free sample next to a tip jar. It never seems as free. Your sandwich plate is then placed on a school cafeteria tray. Your ticket is marked up, and you can go to other stations to get fries, a hot dog, cream soda, or a knish. For those of you who don't know what a knish is, it's sort of like a fried dumpling of dough filled with potatoes, or as I call it, the carboholic's ecstasy. And then you show yourself to an open table and enjoy your monstrous sandwich. It's not just a deli. It's an experience. I always enjoy sharing a pastrami sandwich at Katz's with one of my kids, and not simply because they eat so little. Okay, Daddy, I'll finish your half of the sandwich. I've taken a photo of each of my children with an enormous pastrami sandwich and a plate of pickles at Katz's Deli. One time when I went to Katz's with my son Jack, they took a picture of us and framed it to put it on the wall. Now whenever we go back there, we get to see a photograph on display for the entire community, proving that I'm the type of father who feeds a 5-year-old smoked meat. It's kind of like a mugshot or a posted bad check. My kids love Katz's. When she was 6, my daughter Mari asked, if there's a Katz's deli, is there a dog's deli too? My helping out with the kids does not only involve me taking them to Katz's deli. After we'd return, I always volunteer to take a nap with them. Sure, I couldn't really do anything else after a Katz's pastrami sandwich, but I'm only napping to help Jeannie with the kids. When she rolls her eyes at me, I like to think of it as her way of saying thank you. Corned beef. There's something about Reuben. I have a confession. I never had a Reuben sandwich before March 2014. I admit this with a bit of shame now that I know how delicious they are. I was in Erie, Pennsylvania, and was unabashedly told that the Reuben from McGarry's Oakwood Cafe was out of this world, whatever that means. I never understood why food is always described that way. Out of this world, you mean like the blue milk Luke Skywalker had on Tatooine? Anyway, I was hesitant to have a Reuben because as an Irish American, I don't have a great history with corned beef. But being a tireless researcher, I obliged. I just always assumed corned beef was so horrible tasting. They had to rename the corned beef sandwich the Reuben so people would actually order it. Every St. Patrick's Day, my mother would make corned beef and cabbage. We would eat it together as a family, and then I would spend the rest of the day questioning the palate of my Irish ancestors. How drunk were those people to be eating a big, tasteless, greasy ball of cabbage
and even less appealing corned beef. This stuff didn't taste like corn or beef. It was just a big, fatty, chewy hunk of unnaturally coral red meat that tasted like cabbage. It was only in 2014 that I realized that my mother, while perfect in many ways, simply made horrible corned beef. Sorry, Mom. It was you, not the corned beef. The Reuben is rumored to have been created in Omaha, Nebraska, which should have made sense to me, seeing how great they are at beef. You may recall my penchant for Omaha steaks. However, I was personally shocked that corned beef came from Omaha, since it was the first time in my life that it dawned upon me that corned beef was actually made of beef. I never said I was smart. Reuben, whoever he was, got really lucky with the sandwich. For me, all the indications would be that the sandwich wouldn't work. Let me break it down. Corned beef, hate. Sauerkraut, hate. Swiss cheese, hate. Russian dressing, not a fan. Rye bread, like my eighth choice. Reuben sandwich, delightful. Apparently Reuben took a bunch of crap no one wanted and turned it into bliss. Maybe Reuben was just a guy cleaning out the refrigerator. I can see it clearly. It was late March 1920 in Omaha, Nebraska, during those long cold days after St. Patrick's Day. Reuben and his brother were playing jacks at the kitchen table. Reuben's mom, offstage.
Reuben, clean out the icebox. It's starting to smell in there. Get rid of that Swiss cheese, sauerkraut, and corned beef. No one wants that junk.
Reuben.
Gross. Do it.
Reuben's brother. I dare you to eat all that nasty stuff at once. How much you pay me? 2 bits. Deal. Hand me some Russian dressing and the George Foreman grill. Scene.
Don't you think it's a little weird that Russian dressing is called Russian dressing? It's not from Russia. It's a lot like Thousand Island, but it has no relish in it. It's just mayonnaise and ketchup mixed together to make red mayo. The use of the color red to define Russian dressing is clearly an outdated slam against the Russians, because Russians used to be a communist country. Since I am a very evolved human being and feel above perpetrating that kind of senseless bigotry, I refuse to call it that. That's why I've started referring to Russian dressing as North Korean dressing. And now I feel way better about eating my Reuben sandwich. Hot dogs and sausages. The missing links. A hot dog, of course, is a sausage, and it's the most popular sausage. The hot dog has become so famous, it is considered as American as baseball and that car company that went bankrupt. I am a true hot dog fan. Even my favorite hors d'oeuvre is pigs in a blanket, which I affectionately refer to as the Midwestern California roll. When I was a kid, I loved hot dogs so much, my sister Pam gave me a package of Oscar Mayer hot dogs for my 10th birthday. And yes, it was my favorite present. That all being said, hot dogs are not even my favorite type of sausage. To me, bratwurst is the king of sausages. Bratwurst. On the sausage scale of greatness that exists in my mind, bratwurst is off the charts. It has no rivals. Although I love Italian sausage, chorizo, andouille, and those thin Polish cabanos sausages, my heart, with all its clogged arteries, belongs to bratwurst. When I was dating Jeannie, I found myself comparing her to a bratwurst. It was then that I realized I was serious about her. Unlike Jeannie, a bratwurst is not pretty to look at, and frankly does not sound appealing. I remember as a 6-year-old being at a friend's house on some breezy summer afternoon. My friend's mom received a call from my mom and announced, "You have to go home. Your dad is making bratwurst." I remember thinking, ugh, anything with wurst in the name has to be horrible. Of course, I went home and realized that the frightening name thing my father was making were what my family referred to as brats. I love the tasty, juicy sausage with the crisp, grilled skin. I'd had no idea that the unfortunate formal name of my favorite summer food was bratwurst. No wonder it goes by brat. I mean, if my parents had named me Jimwurst, I'd probably say, I'm just going to go with Jim. Now, once the weather starts getting nice around May, I think only about bratwurst. I eat bratwurst exclusively during the summer. I guess it's the seasonal popularity that makes it even more appealing. Luckily, I get to spend some time every summer in Wisconsin, America's bratwurst basket. Sure, it's always nice to visit Jeannie's family, but the easy access to a perfect bratwurst is a huge draw. I've heard if you eat bratwurst for more than a week straight anywhere in the United States, you have to pay taxes in Wisconsin.
Bratwurst are so associated with Wisconsin, I'm surprised there isn't a delicious brat in the middle of the state's flag. But by the end of the summer, you realize why hot dogs are the most popular sausage. You can eat a hot dog year-round. You can eat brats only in 3-month increments. Sure, it's fun to pull a muscle eating a bratwurst because it contains roughly the same amount of fat and calories as 2 Thanksgiving dinners, but the body cannot survive on brats. So around September, I'm back to my loyal friend, the hot dog.
Hot dogs.
There is a good reason why hot dogs are the original fast food. They just make everyone happy. Hot dogs are like the antidepressant of food. Hot dogs are always associated with fun things like carnivals, block parties, and eating hot dogs. Hey, hot dogs are that fun. You're never at a baseball game thinking, let me get a beer and a turkey sandwich. You get a beer and a hot dog. Compared with a hot dog, a turkey sandwich at a baseball game sounds like a form of punishment. Hot dogs make every experience better, with the exception of maybe a circumcision. While many of us associate hot dogs only with happy times, there are the party poopers who get all caught up in facts. The contents of hot dogs are not something anyone wants to think about. Lately, hot dogs have experienced a perception problem. When you're eating a hot dog, there is always that annoying friend there to rain on your parade. Do you know what those are made of? I always think, I don't want to know. I just want to enjoy my hot dog. Hot dogs are like strippers, really. Nobody really wants to know the backstory. We don't want to think about how they came to be in their present form of employment. Well, when I was 12, my stepfather, not interested, now let's put some mustard on it. At this point, I don't care. Meat scraps in a tube sound more appealing than caviar, tiny fish eggs to me. I think we hot dog fans should fight back and tell it like it is. I love animal scraps stuffed in intestines. I only eat Hebrew National, which means I'm eating kosher cow lips. I just love hot dogs. I've come to the conclusion that hot dogs could be made up of just about anything and I'd still eat them. Well, anything but kale. I have some boundaries. Hot dogs are a worldwide phenomenon. Every culture seems to have their own special hot dog. One of the best hot dogs I've eaten was in Iceland, served with fried onions and sweet mustard. It was delicious, but it also brought back memories of when I was 10 and my parents brought my siblings and me to Europe. One of my favorite memories was a stop in Tivoli Gardens in Copenhagen, where I had my first hot dog with fried onions. Initially, I thought it was strange, but then I was mesmerized by the combination. As I normally did during that European summer vacation, I followed my blonde parents in their cardigans while I enjoyed the most brilliant hot dog I had ever had. When I finished the hot dog, I pleaded with my mother to get me another one. But when my mom turned around, she wasn't my mom. She was just a blonde lady in a cardigan, and my father was another blonde stranger in a cardigan. I looked around, and every adult in Tivoli Gardens was blonde and in a cardigan. For a moment, I felt like I was trapped in a Hans Christian Andersen story, till I found my parents back at the hot dog stand, sharing another hot dog. Hot Dog Alley. There seems to be a part of the Midwest that really appreciates hot dogs. I call it Hot Dog Alley. In these cities, it's almost a requirement to get a hot dog when you are in town. This hot dog-obsessed geographical area even looks a bit like a hot dog. Starting in Chicago, one must get a Chicago-style hot dog, which for some reason comes with a salad on top. It's probably the only time I'm excited to eat vegetables or fluorescent green relish. The combination of onions, tomato wedges, pickle spears, sport peppers, celery salt, yellow mustard, and the unique bright green sweet pickle relish on a sesame seed hot dog bun is amazing. I've been in parts of Chicagoland that have had 3 hot dog places on the same block, and yes, they were all busy. In Fort Wayne, Indiana, a must-stop is Fort Wayne Coney Island Wiener Stand, where you get the hot dog with way too many fresh-cut onions and a dollop of chili on top. Hot dogs that are prepared this way in the Midwest are known as Coney Island hot dogs, but have really nothing to do with Coney Island, New York. The only thing that I can figure out about the origin of the name is that 100 years ago, when someone from Fort Wayne, Indiana, decided to open a hot dog place, they named it after Coney Island, because that seemed like a faraway place where people ate hot dogs, and they would probably sell more Coney Island hot dogs than chili dogs, as everyone else called them. Because Coney Island sounded more romantic. Yes, to people in Fort Wayne in 1914, Coney Island seemed romantic. Fort Wayne Coney Island Wiener Stand has been serving their hot dogs that way since, well, since people wanted a pound of fresh onions and chili on their hot dog. In Toledo, you must get a hot dog at Tony Paco's, the place Klinger used to talk about on the TV show MASH. The Tony Paco's hot dog is really a Hungarian sausage called kobas, and is roughly the width of a baseball bat. Tony Paco's is also famous for all the signed hot dog buns, because someone's signature on a perishable item made sense to someone, and who doesn't want a little ink on their bun? Hot Dog Alley ends in Detroit, where the onion and chili-laden Coney Island hot dog returns and seems to take center stage. Detroit is passionate about their conies, but unlike the Fort Wayne version, the Detroit conies have a meatless chili that is mostly beans. Aside from onions, chili is the most important element to the Coney Island-style hot dog, and all these locations have their own spin on the chili. Different parts of Michigan have their own variety of chili sauces, from chili made with Hungarian spices to a dry topping made of finely ground beef heart. The vendor proudly announced this special ingredient while handing me my hot dog. Frankly, pun intended, I would have been more comfortable not knowing that information until several days after eating the hot dog, but I ate it nonetheless. Recently, I did a stand-up tour through Hot Dog Alley with my friend and opening act, Tom Chaloux, who commented in Toledo, "I don't think people are supposed to eat hot dogs 4 days in a row, right?" "Oh, we are, Tom, and I did. After all, we were in Hot Dog Alley." Grocery store hot dogs. Like many people, whenever I'm at a ball game or a movie, I enjoy eating 4 or 5 hot dogs. Sure, the hot dogs at these places might be like $6 a pop, but hey, we're talking about hot dogs here. Anyway, early one recent morning, right before heading to bed, I was in the grocery store buying a block of cheese and a 6-pack of beer for breakfast. I saw the sign that announced a package of 10 hot dogs on sale for $4. I thought, huh? This must be a typo or something. Surely the store must mean $20. I picked up the package of hot dogs, and sure enough, right there on the package, the price tag clearly stated $4, but I still didn't believe it. I picked up another package, and sure enough, $4. So I held up the package and asked some old woman near me, "Have you seen this? Or am I dreaming?" Well, she scrunched her face and looked at me like I was drunk or something. Granted, I was, but not stumbling or anything. So she didn't have to look at me like that. I mean, what a gloomy gus. Leaving that black cloud in my dust, I skipped up to the cashier, paid $4 for a 10-pack of hot dogs, brought them home, and then I, Jim Gaffigan, actually cooked them. Believe it or not, in my very own kitchen. I swear I'm not lying. Sure, it wasn't that easy, but I figured it out. Jim's homemade hot dog recipe. Being a person who likes to share his good fortune, I would like to now give you my recipe for homemade hot dogs that are as good as the half dozen we all buy at the ballpark. I might be backtracking, but first you're gonna have to do a little shopping. Since we're making hot dogs, definitely buy hot dogs. I find it best to buy hot dogs in the hot dog section of your grocery store. Okay, so you've got hot dogs. Let's get started. Don't be afraid to write down some of these instructions, because cooking hot dogs can get complicated. Step 1, opening the hot dog package. Take your hot dog package and open it up. I like to tear it open with my teeth, unless my wife is in the room. Then I'll use a knife, a key, or a ballpoint pen. Either way, be careful. That package isn't only filled with fresh hot dogs. There's also hot dog juice in there. You don't want to spill that juice on your shirt. The shirt will smell like hot dogs for a month, unless, of course, someone washes the shirt for you. Step 2, prepping your hot dog. Take a hot dog out of the package with your fingers. Put the hot dog in the microwave. If your wife or mom is around, put the hot dog on a plate or something paper before you place it in the microwave. That way, they can't complain about having to clean up your greasy mess later on. Step 3, the microwave. The microwave can be the most confusing part of making a hot dog. If you're like me, I find it hard enough trying to figure out how to open the damn microwave door, let alone how to set the cooking time. Don't worry, you'll get it eventually. Just keep hitting random buttons. Set the microwave for any number of seconds under a minute and push start. This will most likely be the button with start printed on it. If you can't find the start button, yell for your wife or mom. Step 4, cooking your hot dog. Once you hit start, you should hear some noise, and sometimes the inside of the microwave starts spinning. I always sit back and watch the action. The window on the microwave is there for that reason. Like a lot of people, I like to hum along to the microwave. I'm a very musical person. Step 5, the bing. When you hear a bing, stop staring at the microwave. Once you've figured out how to open the door, grab the hot dog with your fingers. Warning, this sucker is gonna be hot. If someone is around, use a fork or something to stab it with. Step 6, bunning your hot dog. If you still live at home or are married, you might have hot dog buns, so check around the kitchen. If you do have a hot dog bun, put the cooked hot dog in the pre-sliced part of the bun. I recommend the top slice buns. Your hot dog is less likely to roll out. I learned that the hard way. Now, if you only have hamburger buns, cut or tear the hot dog in half and eat it like a hamburger. Do not attempt to cut the hamburger bun in half to try to shape it like a hot dog bun. It's extremely dangerous. Cut the dog. However, get ready for way too much bread. Step 7, dressing your hot dog. Now you're ready to put whatever you'd like on your home-cooked hot dog. Your choices are endless. You got mustard, your relish, your onions. Hell, you could put peanut butter on it for all I care. Hey, it's your hot dog, buddy. Unless you're a ketchup hot dog or mayo hot dog person. In that case, I have nothing to say to you, weirdo. Warning, don't try to force your bunned hot dog into a mustard jar. Not only could the hot dog break in half, but you're also going to end up with way too much mustard on that puppy. Another warning, don't put the condiments directly on the bun. Unless you're a soggy bun person. In that case, I have nothing to say to you either, weirdo. Well, there you have it, a homemade hot dog you made yourself at home. I hope you've learned something. Lord knows there are no hot dog making schools out there, and those microscopic directions on the package are just too damn confusing. Feel free to pass along this Jim Gaffigan homemade hot dog recipe to any of your friends you meet at the unemployment office. Gyro, the last call meat. The gyro is from Greece, but it's actually the national food of drunk people. One of the only things I remember about attending college was eating gyros with melted American cheese prepared by Korean immigrants at a pizza place in D.C. Ain't America great? I'm not sure how or why gyro meat is cooked on that oversized metal paper towel holder and then sliced with a hunting knife, but from what I can tell, it's just Greek bologna, and it's delicious. Unlike that American cheese bastardization I had the pleasure of experiencing at college, the proper way to eat a gyro is to pack the slices of Greek bologna into a pita with onions and tomatoes and drench it with garlicky yogurt tzatziki sauce. There is an ongoing debate about the pronunciation of the word gyro. Some say gyro, some say gyro, but on the inside we're all saying we are drunk and we want more happiness. The last gyro I ate sober was in the Newark airport on February 3rd, 2009, a day that will live in infamy. I remember turning to Jeannie and saying, well, that was a mistake, which I've often said after I eat something, but this time I meant it. I felt so bad I could barely finish Jeannie's burger before we got on the plane. It was a long, uncomfortable flight. I quickly learned that the only advantage to eating a gyro at the airport is that you don't care if the plane goes down. I realized then that my gyro at the Newark airport was missing a key ingredient, alcohol. The cheeseburger, America's sweetheart. Someone once told me there was a study that found the average adult is supposed to eat red meat only once a month. Of course, this study was actually conducted by cows. Not being a fan of studies, I eat a lot of cheeseburgers. If you called me and asked me to list the last 3 meals I've eaten, at least 2 of them would be cheeseburgers. The 3rd meal was because I couldn't find a cheeseburger. If steak is the tuxedo of meat and bacon is the candy of meat, then a good cheeseburger is the mother's hug of meat. There should be way more poetry written about cheeseburgers. I've always felt that a cheeseburger could be a rating system for the pivotal moments in my life. First time doing stand-up equals 2 cheeseburgers. Marrying Jeannie equals 3 cheeseburgers. Receiving a free cheeseburger equals 4 cheeseburgers. You get the idea. If I were advising a suicide hotline, I'd recommend starting every call with, hey, how about a great cheeseburger? I'm talking about a cheeseburger here, not a plain hamburger. I don't know who's eating a hamburger without cheese, but he's probably an alien impersonating a human. In my world, a burger must have cheese, and preferably cheddar.
Cheese was such an important topping to the hamburger, the name had to be changed to Cheeseburger. A world without cheeseburgers is not a reality I want to partake in. Non-ethnic restaurants that don't offer cheeseburgers are like a USA Today without a sports section. What's the point? I don't expect a great Indian restaurant to offer a cheeseburger, but then again, I'm going to an Indian restaurant because I couldn't find a place that serves cheeseburgers. A cheeseburger a day keeps the feelings away. Cheeseburgers seem to put me in a trance. I usually remember I was going to start eating healthy around the last bite of a cheeseburger. I eat my cheeseburgers in a ritualistic manner. The first bite is always done with a bit of hesitation. Am I going to like this cheeseburger? Am I going to love it? How's the meat? Do I need more condiments? The second bite is the getting to know you bite. I might think I like the cheeseburger, but I haven't given over fully. The third bite is when I give in. I am enveloped in pure happiness. I say things like, this is amazing, or no, you can't have a bite, or go tell your mother you're hungry. The fourth bite always has a twinge of sadness. It means I'm more than halfway through with my cheeseburger. The fifth bite is always a small nibble because I've suddenly decided I should ration the cheeseburger so I can make the experience last. Then, before I know it, the cheeseburger is gone. It's a memory, a beautiful memory. Here are some great cheeseburger memories. Shoops. Calvin Trillin once wrote, "Anybody who doesn't think that the best hamburger in the world is in his hometown is a sissy." This is a brilliant observation that refers to the inherent provincial affection we all have for our hometown burger. It's an attachment that extends beyond taste and logic. So I guess I'm no sissy when I say one of the best burgers on this planet is a Shoops burger from where I grew up in Northwest Indiana. I understand and appreciate the wisdom of Mr. Trillin's point, but I naively believe that even if I were from Kansas City or New York City, I would find the Shoops burger to be the most excellent. Shoops does two things to their burgers I normally dislike. Their burgers are well done and flattened. Hamburger sins in my mind. Magically at Shoops, these sins are forgiven. Their burger is flawless. The meat is crispy but not burnt. The cheese proportion is perfect, and the pickles are a sharp accent without being overpowering. I've yet to eat a Shoops burger during a return visit to Northwest Indiana and be anything but completely satisfied. Calvin Trillin has spoken. Shake Shack. I've lived in New York City for over 20 years, and during that time I've enjoyed some of the finest burgers of my life. Jackson Hole, PJ Clark's, and Corner Bistro hold a special place in my heart. But Shake Shack is something even more special. Where else other than Shake Shack would you find people in New York City lining up in zero-degree weather? Well, maybe a Broadway show or a place that sells mittens. The Shake Shack cheeseburger is one of the juiciest, most flavorful burgers, and with its not-too-hard, not-too-soft bun, it is well worth the wait. I asked the owner of Shake Shack to build one of his restaurants in my apartment. I figure the kids don't need a bedroom. Burger à cheval. A cheeseburger with an egg on it is called a cheeseburger à cheval at Balthazar's in New York City. In French, the translation of this is on horseback. But the reference to horses does not stop anyone from eating this burger, because most people don't speak French, and those who do are poetic enough to understand that this phrase refers to an over-easy egg on top of the meat. I like to add bacon, so I cover the three major animal meat categories of cow, pig, and chicken. It's my way of supporting farmers. I love a fancy restaurant that is serious about its cheeseburgers. Balthazar delivers every time for me. The perfectly cooked yolk is soft enough to be liquid, but not liquid enough to be disgusting. It's nature's ideal sauce. Butterburger, Cops, Culver's. Growing up, I never realized exactly how seriously Wisconsin took its title of dairy state. It all became clear when I was exposed to the Wisconsin Butterburger. I can only assume the Butterburger was inspired by someone's desire to use as much butter as possible. A pat of butter is put on the bun, another is put on the burger, and the onions on top are grilled in butter. Not surprisingly, the burger tastes a lot like butter. Any state that puts cheese and butter together should get 2 stars on Old Glory. Undead Gaffigan, Zombie Burger. Zombie Burger is a gourmet burger restaurant in Iowa that combines everyone's two favorite things, burgers and the post-apocalyptic world of zombies. You can get burgers like The Walking Ched or George Romero's Pittsburgh. When Zombie Burger asked me over Twitter what I wanted on